Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. This is a very special and a little bit different show today because usually I do this show live, but today my guest is Professor Anne Steineman, and she is calling from Melbourne, Australia, where if we were to do it live, it would be 2 in the morning or something. So I agreed that we could record it. And so if it sounds different than usual and we don't have our usual ins and outs with the commercials, or I don't know how this is all going to go, but I'm sure we're going to have a great interview. And I'm so excited to talk to Anne because she really is a pioneer in the work that she does. What she does, I'll say it simply, and then she'll tell us more scientifically what she does. But what she does is she tests consumer products to find out what's really in them. And I want to just keep talking about that subject now, but I'll wait. So let's introduce her, and then she and I can talk together. This is Professor Anne Steineman, Professor of Civil Engineering and Chair of Sustainable Cities at the University of Melbourne, Australia. She's an internationally recognized expert in the area of engineering and sustainability, including environmental pollutants, infrastructure systems, health, and some other things that are not the topic of the show. Hi, Anne. Thanks so much for being with us.
Deborah, thank you so much. You know, I'm such a big fan of you and your work, and I think the website and the work that you do are just extraordinary. You're the pioneer. You're really the international leader on this. So thank you so much, and I'm thrilled to be on your show.
Thank you. So let's just start out before we talk about your study, because I've been talking to Anne for a number of years. She's been writing different studies. She's been doing different studies and writing papers, and she's just come out with her most recent study. And the whole basic idea of why she does this, well, I'll say it and then I'll let her say it, is because there's a problem, and I keep talking about this problem, and that is that there isn't enough disclosure about what's in products for us to really know what the toxic chemicals are. And I say this over and over. It's like my work, it would be easy if somebody were to just say, here's the list of ingredients, and I can go look them up. And the problem is that we don't get that list of ingredients as consumers. So, Anne, why don't you just
Thank you so much. Well, I'll tell you what motivates my work is that we know these products have hazardous chemicals in them because people are reporting adverse health effects. And the effects can be things from migraine headaches and dizziness to seizures to breathing difficulties to rashes to even losing consciousness. So I really look at the human reports to really, it really motivates my work. So I started doing this work probably about 25 years ago, and I started publishing the studies about a decade ago, because I'm trying to figure out what's in these products that's making people sick. You know, what is it? So as an engineer and a scientist, I really wanted to figure it out. And if you look at the labels, he typically lists a couple of very benign sounding ingredients. And it's the products that we're talking about, let me just mention. They're consumer products. So it's things like air fresheners, deodorizer, hand sanitizers, personal care products, laundry supplies, which includes dryer sheets and fabric softeners and detergents, cleaning products, all sorts of cleaning products, from window cleaner, floor cleaner, bath cleaner, multi-purpose cleaners. So these are common consumer products that are used every day in our homes, our workplaces, and our schools. And I was receiving emails from people, and I've received over 3,000 emails from people telling me that they've been getting sick from these common products. And so along with this, I've also done work in exposure assessment. So as an engineer, engineers are concerned with pollutants and health. And so I was looking at, well, what are the major sources of pollutants as we go through the day? Well, it turns out it occurs indoors, and the primary sources of our exposures are consumer products and building materials. So now, paradoxically, these are sources that do not need to disclose other ingredients. So I go, this is so ironic, because the primary sources of our exposure to toxic chemicals are precisely the sources that don't need to disclose their ingredients. So anyway, that's what really propelled me into doing these studies, is really trying to figure out why what's being emitted from these products is causing people to be sick, and not just some mildly sick, but very seriously ill. And these types of effects can be disabling and life-threatening. And these types of products have also caused people with chemical sensitivity, significant hardship. I mean, the people can't go into public places because of the use of air fresheners or scented cleaning products. And I have hundreds upon hundreds of stories. It's just tragic stories. It just gets to my heart. You know, where people want to go visit their dying parent in the hospital, but they can't because the hospital uses air fresheners or scented hand sanitizers, things like that. So your listeners know this very well. But so that's the motivation for the research.
Well, thank you. I understand that because that's pretty much my motivation for my research, too, that because I got sick and I knew other people who were sick, and when I found that I could at least identify as much toxic chemicals so that I could remove them from my home and I started recovering my health, I said, wow, if somebody had just told me this, that I was being exposed to toxic chemicals and that I wouldn't be sick if I wasn't exposed to them, I would have done something, and that I did recover my health because I eliminated toxic chemicals. But here's something very, very important, and that is they do damage. You can remove the toxic chemicals after the effect, but I've spent my whole life, even though I'm no longer chemically sensitive because I live in a very non-toxic home, but my body is damaged. I am struggling with the damage that was caused every day. And that we need to not be damaging people's bodies, people's health, and then have to... It should be that everybody gets to live in a safe environment at home, and not that we should be exposed to toxic chemicals and then have to recover from that.
Right, exactly. So I think my research is designed to help those people who are, of course, already, sensitized and feel the effects, but also those people who may not be aware what they're being exposed to. It's to prevent the next generation of chemically sensitive people and to try to really help people. And I agree with you completely that if we live in a safe environment, that people feel great, and I've seen the first effects, you get rid of the air fresheners, get rid of the scented cleaning products, people recover their health, exactly. And so it's kind of like, if you think from a workplace perspective, economically, it makes so much sense. If you can keep people healthy and productive just by removing these products, I mean, what a benefit.
Right.
So, and another reason I did this research was that, I'm still trying to unravel the mystery of why, for instance, why fragrance products are so problematic. People who are fragrance sensitive are not necessarily sensitive to natural aromas, things that are very, like a banana or something like that.
Right.
But it's a synthetic banana scent. Exactly. So I think there's a synthetic chemical problem, a petrochemical problem. And this is kind of our alert to say, the human body doesn't deal well with synthetic chemicals. Let's try to figure out why this is. But the other issue here is that, for instance, let's say an employee or just a person is trying to talk to management saying, can you please remove the air fresheners from your restrooms? And then the manager says, well, I'm looking at the label, this air freshener just says it's, all organic essential oils. And what could be wrong with that? But what they don't realize is, first of all, that's not disclosing all the ingredients. And second of all, that doesn't mean there aren't any potentially hazardous chemicals in there. So I'm also trying to provide evidence for people to claim their rights to fragrance-free places, so we can say, well, that's not actually the case. Believe it or not, that these products do not disclose all ingredients. They don't disclose all the hazardous ingredients.
Okay, so let's talk about labeling for a minute before we get into your study, because tell us about how these things are not on the label and also about the MSDSs. I've been studying your study, and you had some very interesting numbers about how few ingredients are actually on the MSDS.
Okay, so here is the situation, is that there is no law or any other country that requires the disclosure of all ingredients in a consumer product. Now, foods do need to list all their ingredients. However, they don't need to list ingredients in flavors. And that's a related story to fragrance, because flavors and fragrances are essentially the same types of chemicals. But they do need to disclose all ingredients. However, consumer products, when I say consumer products, I mean things like the air fresheners, the cleaning products, the soaps, the hand sanitizers, the cleaning supplies, they don't need to disclose all of their ingredients. In fact, they can, and one of the problems is here is, the public risk perception, because if you look at a laundry detergent label and it says something like biodegradable surfactant, if it lists something on the label, you might mistakenly think that's all the ingredients. Oh, it just has biodegradable surfactants. That sounds benign and simple enough, but that's very misleading, because what's happening is people are looking at just a couple of ingredients, they think they see all ingredients. So anyway, back to the regulations. There is no law that requires the disclosure of all ingredients in consumer products or any ingredient in a fragrance. And so basically it's one disclosure, non-disclosure law on top of another. So that's for labels. And the same with material safety data sheets. There is no law that requires a disclosure of all ingredients on a material safety data sheet. Even though it has that little box that says hazardous ingredients, it doesn't need to list everything. And while the companies are required to provide, to test their product for potential hazards, there is essentially no follow-up or monitoring. So it's a self-regulating process. So that's a chronic problem with material safety data sheets, is there's not really a way to check to make sure are they accurately disclosing and testing all of their ingredients.
Yeah, my point about material safety data sheets is that I look at them, but I don't look at them from the viewpoint of saying, well, if there's no toxic chemicals listed, then that doesn't, then it means that they're not there. I look and I see, well, if there's a toxic chemical there, then we really need to pay attention to that. We need to say, there's toxic chemicals in this product and not use it. But the problem is, on the other side, so we can use MSDS sheets and labels as warnings, but we can't use the labels or the MSDS to say that the product doesn't contain toxic chemicals.
So we know
they're there is because you are testing them.
Right, so it can rule a product out, but it can't rule a product in. It's disclosing something, rule it out, but you can't rule it in. So one of the other interesting things about toxicity is, this is, again, what I'm trying to investigate, is, these products are obviously causing hazardous effects, okay, because people are getting sick from them. So what does this teach us about toxicity? Well, toxicity is not just individual chemicals, even though that's the way we test and regulate individual chemicals, that's what I've done, but we have very little information and knowledge on the toxicity of mixtures. So we have synthetic chemicals individually in synthetic mixtures. These are mixtures not known to nature and chemicals not known to nature, okay? So I say that the ultimate tests are humans. If humans are having adverse effects, that means there's something that's toxic in them, So I look at it the other way around, because traditionally the argument is, well, the levels are within regulatory limits. Well, first of all, our indoor air environments aren't regulated necessarily for those chemicals. And the levels, are really, they're so generous, so it doesn't really say much. But I look at the other way around, saying people are having effects. What are the levels? What should we be regulating for? So it's not just the individual chemicals. It's the fact that there's mixtures of chemicals, and then there's this whole area of secondary pollutants. So the chemicals, and I'm going to get into the results of the study in a minute, the most common types of chemicals emitted from fragrance products are things like limonene, alpha-pinene, beta-pinene. These are called terpenes, T-E-R-P-E-N-E-S. There's a class of chemicals called terpenes. Well, terpenes can have inherent toxicity, be toxic in and of themselves, but then when they react with ozone in the air, which is readily available in the air, they immediately generate a range of secondary pollutants that can be even worse, things like formaldehyde, acetaldehyde, and ultrafine particles. So in a way, you've got, you have a class of chemicals that may have toxicities, but then they react with air, and they generate this whole host of additional types of pollutants. So again, I'm really trying to investigate, what is it that might be causing these effects? Is it the mixtures? But again, I think taking a chemical-by-chemical approach to regulation isn't really going to be, that kind of misses the bigger picture. And I think it may be part of the bigger picture is the petrochemical problem, the synthetic chemical problem.
many years ago, when I first started researching, and I wish I had a copy of this study or couldn't find it, I remember in one of my early books I wrote about a study where they did on rats where they were studying different food additives. And so when they gave the rats one food additive or a color, I think it was food color, then nothing happened. And then they gave the rats two food additives, and they got sick. And then they gave them three food additives, and they all died.
And that's very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I've never seen a test like that, but that's the way we should be testing, because none of us are being exposed to formaldehyde in isolation.
Right.
Or any of the other chemicals. And so you could look at, you're going to tell us about what you found in these consumer products, is a mixture, and then you take, but we're not just using one consumer product. We're using two or three or four or ten, and then we're going and sleeping in a bed, and we're putting on clothes, and we're going out and driving our cars, and we're exposed to so many chemicals that you can't ever really evaluate in a lab or in a study what those things are together. And then you have all the different factors of what makes somebody be able to tolerate those or not tolerate those, so that your age and the condition of your body and how much you're being exposed to and how often you're being exposed to it.
Right.
And all these factors,
right.
You can't calculate it. And so
right.
My approach has always been to find whatever's toxic and just eliminate it, and not even, you know, the fewer toxic chemicals that we can have in our lives, the better off we're going to be.
Right, right. You know, I think that humans are the ultimate integrator. I mean, we, you know, human canaries, we, you know, understand the effects of these products. You know, that we may not be able to identify certain bad actors, but collectively, if people are reacting to it, there's something going on. You know, we really have to listen to people. Yeah, absolutely. So what I might say is that perhaps I want to, I'm conscientious of the time, and I want to let people know where to get a copy of the article unless they'd if they'd like one. If you Google my name, Anne Steinman, so it's A-N-N-E, and the last name is S-T-E-I-N-E-M-A-N-N, you'll come up with my website, and it has a lot of my publications on it that are relevant to this topic. And just click on publications, and it's the first one in the list, and you can get the full article with all of the data. So, and Deborah, if you want to, I don't know if it's posted on your site as well.
I will have it on my site. People can go to
Great
Talk Radio, and there'll be the description of the show, and I'll have your links.
Excellent. That's very helpful. Thank you. And so, yeah, there's, I guess, two main pieces. Well, I guess the results of the study, but also the broader implications of it. Because in this study, why it's different or went a step beyond the previous studies I've done where I've analyzed products, I looked at products called certified green and organic. And I also looked at fragrance-free products in addition to the fragrance products and found some really interesting things.
Well, good. Why don't you tell us about the study?
Okay, great. So this time I analyzed 37 common consumer products, the same types that I mentioned, air fresheners, laundry products, cleaners, and personal care products. And I analyzed them for VOCs, volatile organic compounds. These are things like fumes. So I didn't analyze them for SVOCs, the semi-volatile organic compounds, which are chemicals like phthalates. So this is just the VOCs, which means there's potentially more chemicals in these products and just what I have found. So of these 37 products, I found 156 different types of VOCs. Now, collectively, that was more than 556 VOCs altogether from these products. Now, what was interesting is of these 156 VOCs, about 42 are classified as toxic or hazardous under federal laws. In other words, they'd be regulated if they're coming out of a smokestack or a tailpipe, but they weren't regulated in these products. Okay? Now, what's
that
interesting
is just astounding to me.
Oh yeah, well that's part of the untold story here.
If something is regulated, why isn't it regulated across the board? I mean, this is something that I found when I was trying to, I still am trying to find out what's in consumer products, but I would go and I'd look at the regulation and I'd look at the label and I'd find out things like that formaldehyde coming off a particle board is regulated if it's in a 4x8 sheet, but not if it's cut up and made into a table.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's very interesting.
Well, it's the same thing like with air fresheners, you know, that you're looking at acetaldehyde. One of my studies looked at acetaldehyde coming out of dryer vents, okay? And so it's comparable to tailpipe emissions. Tailpipe automobile emissions are heavily regulated, but why aren't we looking at dryer vent emissions? Actually, that's my next studies. I'm going to be analyzing even more extensively dryer vent emissions. So that one's coming up. I'll be doing that. So back on the findings, so of these back to the given numbers, these 37 products, collectively, they emitted more than 559 VOCs collectively, and those represent 156 different types of VOCs. And of those 559, 230 of them are classified as toxic or hazardous under federal laws, regulated in other media and other forms. Now, what's interesting is fewer than 3% of all these ingredients were disclosed anywhere on any product label or material safety data sheet, and fewer than 6% of the hazardous ones, potentially hazardous ones, were listed anywhere. And that means we basically have no information on these products. Now, I analyzed about half of the products were so-called green products. They made some claim of being green, organic, all-natural, non-toxic, or with essential oils. They also had claims like organic fragrance, natural fragrance. Some of them were green certified by certifying bodies. And essentially, the emissions of potentially hazardous chemicals were no different than their regular counterparts. And so this is something that your listeners probably already know. It's really the myth of green. But the bigger story is that if it had a fragrance in it, it didn't matter whether it was called green or whether it was regular. It emitted the same types of potentially hazardous chemicals. So this is not to say that all green products are the same as regular products. I'm saying green fragranced products. Yeah. Were no different than the regular fragrance products. And that's an important point. So I'm not saying like the truly green, natural, ecological, you know, simple base products from things like vinegar and baking soda, you know, those are green. But I'm talking about products that call themselves green or green certified or organic or natural fragrance, but that have a fragrance in them. There were no significant differences in the types of hazardous chemicals or the concentrations between the green fragrance products and the regular fragrance products. And one of the problems with that is the green certifying regulations allow fragrances in them.
Yeah.
So, actually, the EPA just came out with a revised version of their design for environment, and I understand that there's an option for fragrance-free, but this is just a relative, and you find a lot of these green-certified products, and I don't want to name the certifying bodies or bodies. The other big problem I see, and I didn't really emphasize this in the article because I didn't really want to go after certain organizations that are trying to do the good job, but there's all these green cleaning guides on the Internet now, like how do you evaluate your product, how green or safe is your product? Well, those organizations do not analyze the products. They go off of labels, and I have talked to these organizations and written to them, and I was saying, how can you provide these assessments of A plus or A or the top rated when I've tested them and I have found potentially hazardous chemicals, ones that have no safe exposure level, and I know that people who are chemically sensitive react to these products, yet you rate them as the highest products. They don't analyze their products. So I want to put a caution out there against, you know, using these green cleaning guides or, product evaluation guides put out by a couple of organizations in the U.S. And I'm very concerned about that they put out ratings and they never never chemically analyze the products, even though they may have very sophisticated algorithms for how they decide toxicity. They're just going off of the listed ingredients, the fewer than 3% of the listed ingredients. And I say, how can you extrapolate? You're doing all these analyses based on less than 3% of the real ingredients. So anyway, that's something I'm very concerned about, is that people are getting misinformation from these green cleaning guides because they don't analyze the product.
I'm concerned about it too, because it's very difficult to give something a rating. What I do is I look at as much information as I can get, I wish that I could just have you right next door here and analyze every product. And then I could say, okay, well, we've found, Ann and I have found the least toxic ones on the market.
But I still go back to me. I really would like to find a way to bring a human experience, because I find that, you know, I'll call them, you know, they're my people, human canaries. They can say, this is, you know, this is great. This is an A plus, or this is really bad. This is a D or an F, that, you know, they know, you know, what's relatively safe, what they can be around and what's
right,
not. And
right.
So they're really the ultimate toxicity testers. You know, unfortunately, in scientific studies, we can't really do human subjects testing on people if we know the exposures are going to cause them to be sick. But at the same time, I want to be able to tap this expertise, you know, this wealth of expertise we have across the country with people who are chemically sensitive, who everybody.
I think that if somebody who is chemically sensitive can tolerate something, it's probably pretty safe for other people.
Exactly. And that would be the way I'd love to have a green certifying process, is chemically sensitive people have to say, this is safe. And then, okay, it's green. Or same thing with a green building. Yes, this building I can handle. This is a good building. Then I say, okay, now we can call it a green building.
Well, I have to say, as long as we're talking about green, that one of the reasons why I've been doing this for more than 30 years, and so I've gone through different phases in my career, and there was a time when green things first came out that I thought, oh, this is really important, we need to be green. But as I did the studying about it, what I found was that most people who are concerned about green are concerned about energy efficiency and resource use and all these kinds of things, and which is a fine thing to do. But many times the toxicity question was left out completely. And
right,
so
right.
There was a point, I think about 5 years ago now, 4 or 5 years ago, where I said, wait a minute, I need to just put all that green thing aside. And there's plenty of people who are working on green issues, and I just need to stick to the toxic issues, because if we don't pay attention to what's toxic, it doesn't matter if we recycle or not, because we're all going to be sick and dead.
That's right.
I'm saying this bluntly, but it's actually true. If we don't pay attention to this, then
that's right.
Then,
because, right.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of green buildings that may be good for energy efficiency but are not good for health.
Yeah. And that's
exactly.
I mean, the whole field of indoor air quality came from some decades ago when people started sealing up their houses for energy efficiency. People got sicker and sicker and sicker until people started investigating and finding there were all these toxic chemicals in people's
that's
homes.
Right. No,
it
that's
were
right.
Not evident until people started sealing them up for energy efficiency. So if somebody wants something that's not toxic, do not buy anything that says that it's green and expect it to be that, because that's not the criteria.
That's right, exactly. So what I was, that's right. So I want to make sure I cover two more things here because we have time. So one is, you know, people probably say, so fragrance-free, what did you find in the fragrance-free? Well, I analyzed name brand fragrance-free version. So I analyzed like the fragrance version of a laundry product and the fragrance-free of that laundry product, and they were name brands. I also analyzed fragrance-free green products. Now, what I found was that the fragrance-free products did not have the terpenes, so it didn't have the fragrance chemicals, which can be problematic for people. But fragrance-free doesn't necessarily guarantee non-toxic, and that makes sense because the basic product can still have potentially hazardous chemicals in it.
Right.
But then the added fragrance is a whole other level of potential toxicity and hazard. So
right.
Fragrance-free was not just simply fragrance minus, you know, the fragrance version minus the fragrance chemicals. I mean, there's some other things in it. But all that said, at least it didn't have the fragrance chemicals. And this is consistent with the reports I've gotten from people. I hear a lot, you know, I can handle it if my neighbor uses fragrance-free detergent, then I'm fine, but I can't use these name brand fragrance-free detergents because I break out in a rash. Okay? So
yeah.
Maybe something where you don't have all the volatile compounds, so you're okay around it if somebody else uses it, but you can't really use it on yourself because it may have other things like nanoparticles or microplastics or a lot of SVOCs or something else in it. And but these are the name brand fragrance-free products I mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, and so kind of also, this is kind of on a tangent, but everything's related. I've received, because in this whole, you know, I've gotten so many emails from people. I might also say that I've done this research on my own, meaning that I get no money for it from anywhere. I've done it because I feel it was just societally important. So, you know, in a way, too, it's given me no conflict of interest. At the same time, it's kind of, it's exciting, at the same time, overwhelming to get, like, thousands of emails, you know, and I want to help. So that's why I put my articles out there. And that's why I also want to address a question that often comes to me in email, is that someone is getting sick from the use of fragrance products in some environment. What rights do they have? Okay, if they're in a work environment.
Talk about that.
Because I've dealt a lot with this, you know, with helping people get a comment. Like, I wish I'm just one person. I wish I could help everyone, but so I'm going to give the general advice. If it's in a workplace, you have rights. You do not have to be exposed to fragrance products. You have rights under the Americans with Disabilities Act. And don't let anyone tell you, well, fragrance sensitivity isn't a disability. The ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, is symptom-based, not disease-based. So if you have disabling symptoms, and disabling is very broadly defined. I mean, if you get migraine, headaches, difficulty breathing, kind of dizziness, loss of cognitive function, feel kind of woozy, those are disabling, okay? And so you don't need to, quote, prove that fragrance sensitivity is a condition or that it's a classified as disability. If you have adverse effects like the types I described, the types are typical of fragrance exposure, it's considered a disability under the Americans with Disabilities Act. All you need to get an accommodation is you have a doctor write a letter, and there's lots of good temp, and I'm going to give you some advice in a minute about who to contact. A letter saying, you know, so-and-so is my patient, and she has a disabling condition, and here would be a reasonable accommodation. The essential thing is that you need to be a qualified individual, meaning that you can do your job. If you have the accommodation, that means you can do the essential functions of your job, just, you know, the essential functions, if you have the fragrance products removed or you have some accommodation. Now, where to go for advice is I found a great organization called the Job Accommodation Network, JAN. If you Google them, you'll pull them up. I think they're partially supported by the EEOC, and they help with workplace accommodations. Now, that's for the workplace. In other venues, you are still covered under the ADA. So you don't necessarily go, you know, JAN is for workplace accommodation. So if you look with the Americans with Disabilities Act, there are several titles of them. Some is for public places, some is for private venues. But again, you are entitled to an accommodation. For instance, if you're trying to shop at a grocery store and they have an air freshener in their restroom and you can't use the restroom because of it, you can talk with the management and saying, I'm a, you know, individual under the Americans with Disabilities Act and I requested a reasonable accommodation that you disconnect the air freshener. I mean, things like that. I mean, you have a legal right to fragrance-free accommodations. Now, it has to be reasonable, so it may not be possible for an entire building to become fragrance-free, but they can certainly provide you a bathroom that you can access that doesn't have an air freshener in it, just for an example.
You know, all of this is very interesting because I'm thinking about, like, going into a public building, that there's a difference between what are the fragrances or the chemicals that might be there in the public building itself versus the fragrances or chemicals that people might bring in. Like, if somebody wears perfume into a building, that's different than having an air freshener in the bathroom. And there's just
right.
No reason why any building cannot be fragrance-free. All the products exist for everything that they need, and it shouldn't be considered a special accommodation. It should just be that all public buildings are fragrance-free. Now, when I was born, all those many decades ago, people smoked in public buildings, and now people do not smoke in public buildings. We should be able to move things forward so that public buildings cannot have toxic chemicals in them, no matter what it is, whether it's fragrances or cleaning products or anything, that building owners should just get enlightened and say, I'm not going to poison people who come in my building.
Right. Well, I think you can. I think it'll get to that. I call it the problem of secondhand sense. It's just like secondhand smoke. So eventually we'll get to that. But people need to speak up to realize you have rights. And in America, you have good rights. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So you are very well protected with the laws in America, and you have to speak up. And eventually, you know, unfortunately, it takes a couple of lawsuits to turn things around, but things get turned around. But people, employers and managers of buildings and public places have to realize that they cannot, they cannot just say, well, we're going to put these products out there, and if people have an adverse effect, too bad. No, you do have rights.
Yes, yes. This is so interesting. I really think that I've seen so much change in the last 30 years that I really think that it is possible to change, that I think that, you know, people are becoming more aware, not only of the problem, but the fact that we do have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness here in America. And how are we supposed to have life or liberty or be happy if we're being poisoned?
Right, right. Yeah, I'm going to go back to what I was taking about before. How do you request an accommodation like the typical one, the air freshener in the grocery store restroom? So how do you approach it? And, you know, there's many different ways, and it really depends on the manager you're talking to, but often kind of an informal, gentle approach may work to say, you know, I have this condition and I can't breathe. My throat closes up whenever I use the bathroom. Is there a way, you know, it's considered a disability under the ADA, so let them know you have a legal backing too, you know. You know, it would be considered an accommodation if you could turn it off. I've never had a case, and I've been working in this area for 25 years, they've refused to provide an accommodation for someone. And I've even gotten air fresheners turned off and removed from major places like airports. So sometimes it's just gone through and just, oh, yeah. So I've got on my list a lot of airports that have now disconnected or removed their air fresheners just because I talk to them. I go, you've got not only a liability risk, you know, but you're going to have people coming in here getting sick or having asthma attacks or seizures because of these air fresheners, and also explain to them that giving them the data that are on my website, I have a fact sheet on air fresheners under my resources page, that air fresheners do not clean, they're not designed to clean the air or disinfect the air, but they're trying to mask an issue. So you really, the best approach is ventilation. But I think, you know, owners of buildings and managers of buildings and store owners don't want to have liability under either the ADA or having someone have an adverse effect there on their premises, because that, you know, affects their insurance as well.
Yeah.
So, there are rights. So sometimes a very nice approach works. If a nice approach, if it's not working, then I often find, a letter, just a letter. And again, there's a lot of people out there who have had success with writing letters. And so, you know, I'd like to say I probably should develop some templates and put them up on my website. But the best approach really is because every situation is different. And so there is no one right approach. But just do realize that you have rights.
Good. So I just want to let you know we have just about 10 minutes left, so I want to make sure that you get to say everything that you want to say.
Well, you've been wonderful, Deborah. I was just trying to think if there's anything that I haven't yet covered or how that, you know, I'm, this is
well,
why.
Let me ask you a question while you're thinking.
Great.
Okay, so could you tell us about what did you find in your testing? Was there a difference between scented products that were scented with essential oils versus products that were scented with synthetic?
No. Unfortunately not. No. I mean, essential oils, there's been other studies on essential oils, and I don't know why the problem, I'm not going to get into the chemistry of essential oils, but they're extracted many times with solvents, or they're diluted with solvents, and so there are solvents and petrochemicals in essential oils. But the other thing is that the product may say it has essential oils, but it may also have fragrances in it. So it doesn't necessarily disclose that it doesn't have other fragrance chemicals in it.
So when you're testing, because I know that for myself, when I was first chemically sensitive, the synthetic fragrance that I knew was synthetic fragrance, that would always make me sick. I mean, one of the first clues for me was that I'd put my perfume on and I'd get a headache. And then I found a little place in San Francisco that would scent their shampoo with vanilla and mint. And that was wonderful. And I found that I could, as long as I knew it was a natural fragrance, well, I didn't even need to know. If it was a natural fragrance and it was high quality and there weren't other synthetic fragrances with it, then I had no problem with it at all. And so it may be that the types of, I'm asking a question now. It may be that the types of products that you were testing had essential oils and something else, but might it be possible that some products that are very carefully made only with essential oils might be okay?
Well, I actually tested some of those products.
Okay.
The ones from the little homegrown shops to put in essential oils. And, I mean, there's been a lot of other research on essential oils. So in your case, you know, the people doing the essential oils probably didn't use solvents to extract them or dilute them. But maybe that the essential oils that these other products that I tested are using are essential oils that have the petrochemicals. I mean, essential oils emit things like benzene and toluene. I mean, these are serious petrochemicals. I mean, benzene. But again, and even in the distillation process, so just saying they're distilled doesn't necessarily guarantee that there are no solvents in it, because I've talked with people who've done distillation, and then in the end, they put in solvents to help the extraction. So I think it's important if people are using a product with but again, listen to your body. I mean, your body knows, right? But what's bothering?
Because a lot of times they're used therapeutically.
Right,
That's probably a different grade of oil than what you're going to find in a cleaning product.
Right. You know, again, listen to your body. But what I'm trying to do, too, is to help. You know, people often say, you know, this product is making me sick, but it shouldn't because it has essential oils. I'm saying, well, listen to your body. There's a reason that maybe it is.
Okay. So what else would you like to tell us?
Well, you've been great, Deborah. I just want to thank you for the wonderful work that you do. As I mentioned at the beginning, I mean, I see your website's really a go-to site for, you're the authoritative voice on this topic, so I really appreciate all the work that you do.
Oh, thank you. I try to be very careful. I try to be very careful, but it's very, very difficult. I think that the most that I can do is, I wish I could test every single product and find out what's really in it. But really what it comes down to is that I can say, these products don't have a whole list of, and I don't even keep a list. I really am looking at each thing individually. But it's like if it's obvious there's toxic chemicals, I eliminate those. And what I'm trying to do is identify the ones that are coming from reputable companies who have the intent of having things be as least toxic as humanly possible, and that they're really trying for that. And that they're testing their products themselves and things like that. And
right, exactly.
And
that's,
and I'm trying to educate people as much as possible, and so that we can all make wise decisions. But it's really, really difficult when we can't just get the information.
Absolutely right. Actually, I'm anticipating another question that your listeners may have is, so why didn't I disclose brand names? So there's the scientific reason is I didn't need to disclose brand names for the purposes of this research, but there's a broader reason, and that is I didn't want people looking at brand names and saying, oh, I won't buy brand A, I'll buy brand B instead that you didn't test. And basically, brand B may be just as, if not more, potentially hazardous as brand A. The main point is that every product I tested emitted potentially hazardous chemicals. I didn't find a single one that didn't. Okay, so I don't want people to run away from the products that I named to other ones thinking they're somehow better, because it was this whole class of products. And there's a third reason, actually, and that's legal liability. And that is, I've learned that there aren't a lot of people. In fact, I think I'm probably the only one doing research on this topic, and there's a reason for that. It's that I haven't been, have to be careful not to be sued.
I think I'm the only person that is doing the kind of work that I'm doing, that there's certainly other organizations that are working on talks, like making this connection between the toxic chemical, the health effect, and where is it in a product. And what
exactly.
Types of products, where is your exposure? How are you going to reduce your exposure? And, there are, as you mentioned, lists that have been compiled, but those lists are just telling you, rating them for, like, you could look up a brand and say, it'll tell you, oh, this is really toxic. I'm selecting and saying, go in this direction. These are less likely to hurt you. And
right.
As I said earlier, whether or not something is toxic to you individually depends on so many factors about your own body as well as the inherent toxicity of something.
Exactly,
so
exactly.
Really, there's nobody in the world that can say any product is safe for everyone. Everybody
right.
needs to evaluate it for themselves. And
right,
that's
exactly.
Really the bottom line of it.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. So how did you end up in Australia?
I'll tell you, it was this position. It's a great position. I'm here as a professor at the University of Melbourne, Australia, which is considered the best university in Australia. They want me to lead an international research program on healthy buildings. And so they've been extremely supportive of my research on this topic. And so I thought, great. it's wonderful. It's exciting. So I feel like I can do the research that will help people around the world. And again, they've been a very support. It's a great university, great colleagues, and they really want to do, they want to support research that's going to make a big international impact. And I said, this will. You know,
this
we could
will.
Be the
this
international.
Absolutely will.
Exactly. You know, that we can, they're very interested in healthy buildings, healthy products, you know, doing research on that topic.
That's right, because if you are going to have a healthy building, you have to put healthy things inside of it.
Exactly,
it's
exactly. So I'm hoping to do the research studies and get them out there and make, you know, and be, you know, do the international work that's going to help people.
Well, you already are. You already are. And I'm just so pleased that you're doing this because it really does show what's actually going on and you show what the problem is. And that we need to have better solutions. We need to have better labeling laws. I mean, I would actually prefer having labeling laws to the laws that people are trying to pass to say, you know, about a tighter regulations. I'd just like
right.
to know what's in the product so that I can choose to not use it.
Right,
and,
right.
And I think that that is the most important thing myself. Not
right.
that I don't think that we shouldn't have tighter regulations, but we need to have, you know, we have a right to know. We have a right to be healthy. We have rights to be able to make choices. And
mm-hmm.
and we can't do that with our consumer products. The things
right.
that we have in our homes day in and day out, we don't know what they are. And
right.
and you are showing, you're shining a light on it and saying, look, here, this is what's in the product that's not on the label.
Well,
and
thank you
so
both.
Proud of you.
Well, no, I'm so proud of you, and I'm so proud of everyone out there. I mean, people who are chemically sensitive, I mean, I just admire you so much for what you go through during a day. You're the real heroes. You have strength that no one else does, that no one else knows about. So, you know, just trying to get through every life in society with all this stuff around. So just really, that's who I'm proud of. You know, I'm proud of all the work that you do, Debbie, because you're really you're a pioneer, you're a heroine, you're out there doing the work, but so are your listening audience. So
yes.
My hat's off to all of them, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we're down to the last minute now. and we can't go over because
we can't go over. So I want to be optimistic.
Right, second.
Thank you. Be optimistic. Be positive. Things will work out. We're going to get information out there. Things will turn around. Things always get better.
Things we do, and yes, everybody should know that there are people working on this. Anne and I are working
yes.
on it, and other people, and you all as consumers have power. And now we only have less. We only have 20 seconds left, so I'm going to say thank you so much.
Thank you, Deborah.
You're welcome. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today has been Anne Steineman. And you can go to Toxic Free Talk Radio and get all her links and go to her website and find out everything. Be well. Bye.